because you are playing this weekend as a part of the Amarillo Symphony Orchestra's 94th season. They are presenting the Old West. It is a pops concert featuring selections from movie scores, and you are going to be performing with them.
Yes. They scored arrangements for two of my songs, one of which we just heard, Promises of Rain. And so I get to appear with them, and they're just a terrific bunch. What a great, great orchestra in such a beautiful space.
I know. It's really as good as it gets, right?
Yeah, I just love it.
Incredible performers, such a beautiful stage, and it just kind of, everything about the acoustics in there just really blow me out of the water every time I see a show there.
Yeah, it's amazing a space so big can feel so intimate.
Yeah, it's good. It's because it's kind of this round little cubby. Mm-hmm. It's like you're in a hobbit hole.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I did feel a lot like a hobbit last night. Now I know why.
That sounds like a personal problem.
Yes.
I feel like a hobbit all the time. Tell us a little bit about what it's been like rehearsing for this performance, and a little bit about the music that's going to be performed this weekend.
Well, I've got to tell you, this is an angst-filled thing to do for a folk singer who plays mostly by themselves, or when they play with other people, the other people follow them. And so here I'm on stage with a cast of, well, it's not a cast of thousands, but there are a lot of people. And then the other thing is that we folk musicians, we listen. We don't read a score. And you always wonder, well, what's the arrangement going to be like? And so I was all nervous, and I showed up last night, and the music staff, the production staff, the people in the center, the musicians on stage, they just made me feel so welcome. And then I heard the arrangements, and they were primo. They were just great. And so now I'm as excited as I was fearful before I got there. And so chalk that up to what an outstanding group. Giacomo, the maestro, the conductor, is just terrific. And I loved watching him work with his orchestra. He did what he had to do, but he was so gracious and moved things along. It was just a terrific experience.
Yeah, and it looks like some of the selections are just really just like the best of the best for what you can expect. We see Magnificent Seven, Dances with Wolves, Rawhide, Silverado, Tombstone, and of course, the Palo Duro Canyon Symphony.
Yeah, that's great. I get to sit through it too, so.
That's great.
You know, it's terrific.
And now, Andy, you've been at this for a while. Tell folks who aren't familiar with you, your music, your poetry, a little bit about your past and you're currently now down in Lubbock.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Lubbock and moved off and then moved back, and I've been there for now a long time because I'm old.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, well, the alternative, as we like to say, is not a good one. So, one of the first things I remember was wanting to draw and wanting to write songs, and I wrote some songs. I wrote one when I was in the second grade, which I remember well enough never to repeat to anyone. You know, it was so terrible. But
you're being very cruel to me right now by not sharing it.
No, I'm being very nice to me, though, by not doing it. I've followed a couple of careers sort of by accident. I was in police work for a dozen years here and in Colorado, not here in Amarillo, but Lubbock in Colorado. And then I wanted to do music, so I quit. But I wound up working in financial services for 10 years, thinking I would, and this is really stupid, that I would get put up enough money that I could, you know, quit and do music. Well,
it's a very poetic line of work, financial planning.
Yes, I was in investment banking, which is even less poetic.
Have you recovered?
I'm a recovering financial
investment
analyst.
Banker.
Yeah. But, you know, the rule in America, at least, is whatever you make as income, you spend 110% of that. And
drinks on me. Whenever you have a nice income, it's like rounds all around. And then you're like, wait, where did the $400 go?
Yeah, and exactly. And you just, you know, especially if you're running your own business, which I did a lot of that time, you hire people and you have to invest for the future. But so eventually I had the great fortune of being in a part of that business that I just hated, and so I quit. I was in my early 40s, and luckily my wife didn't divorce me and my kids didn't run off, and so I began doing music full-time, and through that I wound up getting a chance to write plays, and I've since written a novel and several books, and I teach at the University of Texas Tech. I teach creative process in our Honors College, and for 17 years I taught songwriting in the School of Music, so it's been really a great, great career. I remember what Utah Phillips told me once, talking about a career in music. He said, "It ain't deep, but it's wide."
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that great? So I consider I'm in the wide part. You know, you don't have to have your face on a billboard in Nashville to be successful in the music business. You can do a lot of these things. You can be a disc jockey on public radio.
I mean,
I would say that's a very important part.
Yeah, I would say that it ain't deep, but it's wide would define me personally in so many different ways.
Yeah, I guess you have to hold up the microphone so people can see. While you're doing that, make sure that they get a look at your wonderful lava lamp.
Oh, thank you. That's ambiance back there.
Yeah, I love it.
National Cowboy Poetry in Elko. You've kind of been a staple up there. Tell us a little bit about your experience doing cowboy poetry and where that came from inside of you.
Well, first of all, I'm not a cowboy. And
you're a cow person?
No, I'm not even a cow person. I have a familial connection. My distant uncle, five generations back, is a fellow called Charlie Goodnight.
And never heard of him.
And I grew up, you know, hearing my grandmother and great-grandmother talk about their, you know, uncle. And then I got to the third grade and saw a picture of him in the textbook. And it was the same picture my grandmother had on the wall of her house. And I thought, well, maybe there is something to this. But so I've had an interest in that for a long, long time. And writing about place is really important to me, whether it's music or fiction or poetry. And I want to write about the place that I live in. And I love the flat land of the plains. I love the people out here. And I love the history. And it's so interesting. It's we're a new history. You know, we haven't been out here all that long, including Native people who here on the Llano, you know, the Comanche had two great names for the Llano Estacado. One was the horizontal yellow, which I like. I was probably 10 before I realized grass was supposed to be green, you know. But the other name they have is the place where nobody is, because it was a place you traveled over, but mostly around. And so when you think about it, our permanent residency here in this place is pretty new. And so all of us are in such close proximity to our history and the varied history of the peoples that have been here for coming across here for 12,000 years, which is really cool.
And now being on the stage and sharing the stage with actual cowboys, because the cowboy poetry gathering, there are a lot of actual cowboys.
Yes.
They're career mm-hmm. cowboys that happen to also be poets, storytellers,
yep.
artists. What is your experience? Obviously, you're friends with Betty Ramsey, you know, the widow of the late Buck Ramsey. You were friends with him. What is it like going up there when getting the gathering? Because that's not just folks from the Panhandle at that gathering. That's
around the world.
Chock full of cowboys from mm-hmm. around the world.
Yeah. Well, it's terrific, because what you find out is that they are poets who happen to be cowboys. They're not cowboys who happen to be poets. And there's a real distinction. The other thing is that it's a movement in American poetry that's very important. It is similar to logger poetry. It's also similar to poetry slams. It's very similar to the early history of rap. Not so much the big money stuff you hear on the radio now, but there's a wonderful book by a poet and an investment banker named Dana Gioia, who was poet laureate at one time. He wrote this book called Can Poetry Matter? And his thesis was, poetry was once for the masses, but after the Second World War and the flood of GIs on the GI Bill to colleges, some, including Iowa, started offering writing degrees. And poets began, by force of necessity, to write for other poets instead of writing for people. And so I think a cowboy poetry gathering, a logger poetry gathering, is evidence that poetry is important to all human beings. And that's the greatest thing about Elko. It's a wonderful family. And people, they don't really care if you're not a cowboy. If you get the language right, if you get the attitude right, if you're an observer. Many of the early cowboy poets were not cowboys either. They were people who came to the West for various reasons, but they were good observers and had good ears, and they understood the importance of the land and the people on it. So I find Elko an incredibly rejuvenating place.
Yeah, and it really is all about sense of place and being able to just kind of steep in it and share that back. I mean, it's really just folk music without a guitar, really.
Yeah, although there are plenty of us that bring
our
guitars.
Oh, there are plenty of guitars, yeah. I'm sure.
But I do both, but I like the poetry side of it a lot. There are some terrific writers writing still today. John Doffelmeyer is one of my very favorites writing at the current time. And, of course, my late dear friend Buck, a giant as a writer.
Yeah, he's inspired so many people in this region, and we're very lucky that we are kind of at a crossroads where we do have a lot of folks passing through, and there are a lot of folks that, you know this is kind of a place where that is a beloved form of art. Mm-hmm. So that's really great. You're down at Texas Tech now, and you said Creative Process is the name of your class.
Yeah.
There was a class called that. It was also in the Honors College where I went to college.
Cool.
I did not take it because I was a transfer student, but I just remember it was a lot of like journaling and thinking about things in an interesting mm-hmm. way. There was some very, very strange mystical components to it and collage art. What is your class exactly like?
Well, no one needs to be taught to be creative. We are born creative, but we are have that stamped out of us as we grow older. In fact, E. Cummings had this great line in a poem that starts off, "The Cambridge ladies live in furnished souls." There's a line in there that says about children, "Down they learned as up they grew." Most of my students will be in engineering or pre-med or law. And so my job is to try to bring them back to being three-year-olds, not in every way, but at least in thinking about their creativity. And we talk about process. You can learn process. And the first lesson is forget about the product. Follow the process, and the product will take care of itself. And so we do a lot of different things. There's no structure to the class, which freaks out. It's an honors class, and so these are students that want to know how high up when you say jump. But it's a lot of fun. It's really an enjoyable thing for me, and I think for them as well.
Yeah. Well, we just have about 4 minutes left, and I know you wanted to do a poem or a song.
Sure.
Were you going to do a little something for us?
Yeah. What would you prefer, a poem about this place or a song about
Buck? Oh, Andy,
Buck?
You're selecting.
Oh, well, let me do a poem about this place.
Okay.
So you already played some music. This is called Farm to Market 168, Buffalo Lake to Nazareth.
I already love it.
Just west and a little south of where we are right now. Here goes. This road lay like an invitation south from the commercial highway, straight into the Llano Estacado's rolling gut, where tides of grass rose and fell in pastel yellow swells beneath a blue beyond which there was no cause for sky, where taut fences with steel goat-head barbs and stout cedar posts kept cattle in communion, tractors out, and left the wind to wander at her will. The sweet insinuation of this road was a highway cafe waitress winking as she licked her pencil lid and asked me what I wanted. Was a rodeo queen with a quirt in her teeth, a barrel horse between her legs and her saddle-slick jeans, smoother than sweet cream. Was an angel wing lost in the sun but circling shadows down to the center stripe as mercy given. Like a superstition, this road prickled the hair on the back of my neck, made me sit up straight in the seat of my old van, made me crank the windows down and snap the radio off, made me hold the wheel light like reins and let the Chevrolet have her head and roll like she and this road knew one another well in that life where journey and destination were the same.
That was incredible. And it made me think of Terry Allen's The Beautiful Waitress.
Oh, I love Terry. We're dear pals, and he's one of my heroes, I'll tell you.
You know, when we first moved here, I saw that Terry Allen was performing the entire album Lubbock on Everything at the Lubbock Lights, and
yes,
we drove down to see that.
I organized that, you know?
You have no idea.
Right.
It laid the red carpet for me feeling really, really spectacular about living where I was living after moving from a place where it was very different. So it was...
I'll just make a pitch right now at our archive. We now archive Terry and Joe Harvey's entire collection, and we're creating a center for studies of creativity that's focused or using that as sort of the nexus. So you need to come visit us.
Definitely. And I hear he's hitting the road here real soon, too.
Yeah, I'm going to see him in Houston at the Heights Theater weekend after this. He's in Dallas this weekend, I think.
Nice. Yeah, that's very exciting. Andy Wilkinson, thank you so much for coming on today. Thanks so much for being a part of the Amarillo Symphony Orchestra's 94th season. Folks, I'm not sure how many tickets are left, but the Old West is happening Friday and Saturday night this weekend, 7:30 p.m., and it's going to feature beautiful scores from Westerns. I mean, this is just going to be really big music. Elmer Bernstein, Ennio Morricone, just so much good stuff. So check that out. You can find that at the Amarillo Symphony website. And Andy, I cannot wait to get more of your music in rotation. I'm going to hit you up.
You got it.
All right, folks. This has been High Plains Morning. We have Bill McLaughlin up next with Exploring Music at noon Central. After that, Sinfonia at 1 p.m. and All Things Considered is at 4 p.m. Central. I'll put a link up to this conversation as well as all the information on how you can find out more about the Amarillo Symphony Orchestra Old West performance this weekend. Also, don't forget, you've got the poetry at the Esquire Jazz tonight at 6 to 7, Bill Staines at 7:30 at Chalice Abbey in Amarillo, and Martin Gilmore up at Garden City Community College. Y'all have a good day.